In today's gospel reading, Jesus compares the kingdom of heaven to a wedding. A wedding that looks nothing like the ones that we go to today. No big reception hall, no endless negotiations over who should sit where, no gift registry that's already been picked over by the time you finally make it to the store. No, the way weddings worked when Jesus was alive was that the couple would go to the bride's father's house, where the legal part of the ceremony would happen. And then the couple would go back to the groom's house, where they would have the big party. So the groom in Jesus' parable is inviting people, and he invites these 10 women. And 5 of the women think, this might be a late night, so we better bring some oil for our lamps. And the other 5 think, famous last words, I'll be fine. And while this wedding looks nothing like the ones we go to today, it has one central feature in common. The couple is late. So the women sit outside the house and they wait and they wait. And eventually they doze off and they go to sleep. And when the groom is about to arrive, they wake up. And the women without oil realize this is going to be a bad faux pas. They should have brought some oil, so they try to get some off of the other women. And when they say no, they decide to go into town to buy some. And when the couple finally arrives, they are nowhere to be found. Matthew seems to think that these women were foolish for not bringing any oil. And that's how most generations of Christians have read this text. That the oil represents good works or faith. And these women didn't have the thing that they should have, so when the big moment came, they were left out in the cold. Be prepared, that interpretation goes. Make better choices. Have your oil ready to go. But not having oil really isn't what makes them foolish. No, what makes them foolish is that they take off. They leave. Why did they do that? The groom invited them to the party. The couple wanted them to be there. But they're so scared of being unprepared that when the groom arrives, they bolt. What makes them foolish isn't that they don't bring oil. It's that they don't trust the invitation of the groom. That they're so focused on themselves and what they bring to the table that they miss the party altogether. Instead of trusting that the groom would welcome them in and provide them with what they needed, they decided to try to make everything perfect. And while they were trying to make everything perfect, they missed the party altogether. They missed that what makes the party isn't what the guests bring. It's the love of the couple, it's the presence of God. Maybe that feeling of waiting and feeling unprepared feels familiar to you. This past Sunday, we had yet another mass shooting, this time at a church in Texas. Another round of lives wasted. Another name of a city that will just be shorthand for a massacre, just like Sandy Hook, Las Vegas, Orlando, or Dallas. Another shooting that's become part of what we all live with, part of what feels like our new normal. And we feel frustrated, and we feel powerless, and most of all, we feel hopeless, like we're just waiting for the problem to go away. And part of the reason we feel hopeless is because we have this little drama, this little script that we act out whenever this happens. At first, we ask how we can keep this from happening again. But then we decide that it's too soon, that people need time to grieve, and there will always be time to talk about it later, which is true and is totally reasonable. But according to the BBC, as of last Sunday, we were 309 days into the year, and in those 309 days, we racked up 307 mass shootings. It is always too soon, which also means that it is always too late. Or when we say that we should address the problem, we decide that it's too complicated. There are too many factors at play, and you could never stop all of the mass shootings, which is also true. But surely we have some responsibility to address problems, even if we can't solve them entirely. And so after we run through this drama, this little script that we all know, we settle down and we wait. We wait for a better time to talk about it, or for the situation to feel more manageable. Too often, invited to join into God's work of healing broken communities, reconciling divisions, and bringing life out of death, we are nowhere to be found. When the moment comes when we could be part of God's work, we are out looking for oil, Instead of trusting that God can use us as we are to make the situation better, we are trying to make the situation perfect. And not because we don't care, we do care. The greatest barrier we face isn't whether we care enough about solving the world's problems. It's whether we, as frazzled, underprepared, and burned out as we feel most days, trust Jesus' invitation that we can be part of the solution, that we can be a conduit of God's mercy and compassion to a world in need of it, that the time that God cares about isn't impossibly far off in the future, and that the people God works through are people like you and me, people who aren't perfect, people who don't have all the answers, people who don't always bring enough oil with them. The truth is, you don't need to worry about how much oil you have in your lamp if you're following the one that we call the light of the world. We might think that that sense of hopelessness that we feel is a modern problem. Too much cable news, too many talking heads, too much cynicism. But it goes all the way back to 1 Thessalonians, the oldest book in the New Testament. This book was written about 2 decades after Jesus died. So these people didn't know Jesus, but they were alive during his lifetime. And they have a way of thinking about time that's very different than we do. They think that there's a time about 20 years ago when Jesus was alive and ministering to people. And then you have a time in the future when Jesus is coming back. But they're living in this in-between time. And it's fine because they think their job is to just wait around and wait for Jesus. But eventually they run into a problem. And the problem is that people start dying. And at first they think there must be some explanation, like these people fell away from the faith or they did something. But eventually they realize they're just dying of old age. There's no explanation for it. And so life in the church starts to feel hopeless. Because they think that God could do something for you if you were alive when Jesus was alive, or if you were alive when Jesus came back. So while the church is looking to the future with hope, they see nothing good about the present. The present seems totally devoid of God's activity. So the reading for today is Paul's answer to their hopelessness. And part of Paul's answer is about the people who've died. Paul says that in Jesus' resurrection, God has conquered death. That those who have died will be raised to new life first, and we who are alive, who are left, will be with the Lord forever. So the people who died are fine. They're not beyond God's embrace. And if that's where the reading ended, that would be fine, a totally reasonable answer to their anxiety. But luckily for us, St. Paul keeps going. And this is the part that's actually helpful for us. Paul says that you should grieve the people who have died. But he goes on. We don't want you to be uninformed so that you do not grieve as others do who have no hope. That they should wait for the second coming, for Jesus to come back, but, and here's the but, their waiting should be formed by hope. That the knowledge that God will heal all divisions, wipe every tear, and bring all people to God's self in the future should change how they live in the present. That they should grieve, but not as those who have no hope. So what does grieving without hope look like? Grieving without hope looks like those 5 bridesmaids who left the party. So anxious over their own lack of oil, they couldn't trust the invitation of the groom. Grieving without hope sounds like our own self-fulfilling prophecy that it is too soon to talk about mass shootings. Grieving without hope sounds like our own reticence to deal with problems that are complicated because they feel too difficult. Grieving without hope looks like death because it sees no possibility of redemption or change or resurrection in the present. What Matthew calls the kingdom of heaven is not something that shows up once for all at the end of history. It's not something to sit around and wait for the way the women waited for the happy couple. It's something that shows up wherever God shows up, which means it shows up today, in situations that we consider too complicated. In times that we consider too soon, in situations that we consider hopeless. Grieve, St. Paul writes, but not as those who have no hope. Grieve as a people who believe that God's time is our time. Grieve as a people who believe that God can use us as beacons of light in the world. Grieve as a people who believe that even in our waiting, Christ is present among us. Amen.